the past. All we can do, child, is follow our destiny.
Our destiny? Assuming we know what that is.
Relax, Chiron told me. Keep a clear head. And remember, you may be about to prevent the biggest war in human history.
Relax, I said. I'm very relaxed.
When I got to the bottom of the hill, I looked back. Under the pine tree that used to be Thalia, daughter of Zeus, Chiron was now standing in full horseman form, holding his bow high in salute, just your typical summer camp send-off by your typical centaur.
Argus drove us out of the countryside and into western Long Island. It felt weird to be on a highway again, Annabeth and Grover sitting next to me as if we were normal carpoolers. After 2 weeks at Half-Blood Hill, the real world seemed like a fantasy. I found myself staring at every McDonald's, every kid in the back of his parents' car, every billboard and shopping mall.
So far so good, I told Annabeth. 10 miles and not a single monster. She gave me an irritated look.
It's bad luck to talk that way, seaweed brain.
Remind me again, why do you hate me so much?
I don't hate you.
Could have fooled me. She folded her cap of invisibility.
Look, we're just not supposed to get along, okay? Our parents are rivals.
Why?
She sighed. How many reasons do you want? One time, my mom caught Poseidon with his girlfriend in Athena's temple, which is hugely disrespectful. Another time, Athena and Poseidon competed to be the patron god for the city of Athens. Your dad created some stupid saltwater spring for his gift. My mom created the olive tree. The people saw that her gift was better, so they named the city after her.
They must really like olives.
Oh, forget it.
Now, if she invented pizza, that I could understand.
I said, forget it.
In the front seat, Argus smiled. He didn't say anything, but one blue eye on the back of his neck winked at me. Traffic slowed us down in Queens. By the time we got into Manhattan, it was sunset and starting to rain. Argus dropped us at the Greyhound station on the Upper East Side, not far from my mom and Gabe's apartment. Taped to a mailbox was a soggy flyer with my picture on it. Have you seen this boy? I ripped it down before Annabeth and Grover could notice. Argus unloaded our bags, made sure we got our bus tickets, then drove away, the eye on the back of his hand opening to watch us as he pulled out of the parking lot. I thought about how close I was to my old apartment. On a normal day, my mom would be home from the candy store by now. Smelly Gabe was probably up there right now playing poker, not even missing her. Grover shouldered his backpack. He gazed down the street in the direction I was looking.
You want to know why she married him, Percy?
I stared at him. Were you reading my mind or something?
Just your emotions, he shrugged.
Guess I forgot to tell you, satyrs can do that. You were thinking about your mom and your stepdad, right? I nodded, wondering what else Grover might have forgotten to tell me.
Your mom married Gabe for you, Grover told me. You call him smelly, but you've got no idea. The guy has this aura. Yuck. I can smell him from here. I can smell traces of him on you, and you haven't been near him for a week.
Thanks, I said. Where's the nearest shower?
You should be grateful, Percy. Your stepfather smells so repulsively human, he could mask the presence of any demigod. As soon as I took a whiff inside his Camaro, I knew. Gabe has been covering your scent for years. If you hadn't lived with him every summer, you probably would have been found by monsters a long time ago. Your mom stayed with him to protect you. She was a smart lady. She must have loved you a lot to put up with that guy, if that makes you feel any better.
It didn't, but I forced myself not to show it.
I'll see her again, I thought. She isn't gone.
I wondered if Grover could still read my emotions,
mixed up as they were, I was glad he and Annabeth were with me, but I felt guilty that I hadn't been straight with them. I hadn't told them the real reason I'd said yes to this crazy quest. The truth was, I didn't care about retrieving Zeus's lightning bolt or saving the world or even helping my father out of trouble. The more I thought about it, I resented Poseidon for never visiting me, never helping my mom, never even sending a lousy child support check. He'd only claim me because he needed a job done. All I cared about was my mom. Hades had taken her unfairly, and Hades was going to give her back.
"You will be betrayed by someone who calls you a friend," the prophecy whispered in my mind. "You will fail to save what matters most in the end."
"Shut up," I told it. The rain kept coming down. We got restless waiting for the bus and decided to play some hacky sack with one of Grover's apples. Annabeth was unbelievable. She could bounce the apple off her knee, her elbow, her shoulder, whatever. I wasn't too bad myself. The game ended when I tossed the apple toward Grover, and it got too close to his mouth. In one mega goat bite, our hacky sack disappeared. Core, stem, and all. Grover blushed. He tried to apologize, but Annabeth and I were too busy cracking up. Finally, the bus came. As soon as we stood in line to board, Grover started looking around, sniffing the air like he smelled his favorite school cafeteria delicacy, enchiladas. "What is it?" I asked. "I don't know," he said tensely. "Maybe it's nothing." But I could tell it wasn't nothing. I started looking over my shoulder, too. I was relieved when we finally got on board and found seats together in the back of the bus. We stowed our backpacks. Annabeth kept slapping her Yankees cap nervously against her thigh. As the last passengers got on, Annabeth clamped her hand onto my knee. "Percy?" An old lady had just boarded the bus. She wore a crumpled velvet dress, lace gloves, and a shapeless orange knit hat that shadowed her face, and she carried a big paisley purse. When she tilted her head up, her black eyes glittered, and my heart skipped a beat. It was Mrs. Dodds, older, more withered, but definitely the same evil face. I scrunched down in my seat. Behind her came two more old ladies, one in a green hat, one in a purple hat. Otherwise, they looked exactly like Mrs. Dodds. Same gnarled hands, paisley handbags, wrinkled velvet dresses, triplet demon grandmothers. They sat in the front row, right behind the driver. The two on the aisle crossed their legs over the walkway, making an X. It was casual enough, but it sent a clear message: nobody leaves. The bus pulled out of the station, and we headed through the slick streets of Manhattan. "She didn't stay dead long," I said, trying to keep my voice from quivering. "I thought you said they could be dispelled for a lifetime." "I said if you're lucky," Annabeth said. "You're obviously not." "All three of them," Grover whimpered. "De immortalis." "It's okay," Annabeth said, obviously thinking hard. "The Furies, the three worst monsters from the underworld, no problem, no problem. We'll just slip out the windows." "They don't open," Grover moaned. "A back exit?" she suggested. There wasn't one. Even if there had been, it wouldn't have helped. By that time, we were on 9th Avenue, heading for the Lincoln Tunnel. "They won't attack us with witnesses around," I said. "Will they?" "Mortals don't have good eyes," Annabeth reminded me. "Their brains can only process what they see through the mist." "They'll see three old ladies killing us, won't they?" She thought about it. "Hard to say, but we can't count on mortals for help. Maybe an emergency exit in the roof." We hit the Lincoln Tunnel, and the bus went dark, except for the running lights down the aisle. It was eerily quiet without the sound of the rain. Mrs. Dodds got up. In a flat voice, as if she'd rehearsed it, she announced to the whole bus,
"I need to use the restroom."
"So do I,"
said the second sister.
"So do I,"
said the third sister. They all started coming down the aisle.
"I've got it," Annabeth said. "Percy, take my hat."
"What?" "You're the one they want. Turn invisible and go up the aisle. Let them pass you. Maybe you can get to the front and get away.
But you guys..."
"There's an outside chance they might not notice us," Annabeth said. "You're a son of one of the big three. Your smell might be overpowering. I can't just leave you."
"Don't worry about us," Grover said. "Go."
My hands trembled. I felt like a coward, but I took the Yankees cap and put it on. When I looked down, my body wasn't there anymore. I started creeping up the aisle. I managed to get up 10 rows, then duck into an empty seat just as the Furies walked past. Mrs. Dodd stopped, sniffing, and looked straight at me. My heart was pounding. Apparently she didn't see anything. She and her sisters kept going. I was free. I made it to the front of the bus. We were almost through the Lincoln Tunnel now. I was about to press the emergency stop button when I heard hideous wailing from the back row. The old ladies were not old ladies anymore. Their faces were still the same. I guess those couldn't get any uglier. But their bodies had shriveled into leathery brown hag bodies with bat's wings and hands and feet like gargoyle claws. Their handbags had turned into fiery whips. The Furies surrounded Grover and Annabeth, lashing their whips, hissing, "Where is it? Where?" The other people on the bus were screaming, cowering in their seats. They saw something, all right.
"He's not here," Annabeth yelled. "He's gone."
The Furies raised their whips. Annabeth drew her bronze knife. Grover grabbed a tin can from his snack bag and prepared to throw it. What I did next was so impulsive and dangerous, I should have been named ADHD Poster Child of the Year. The bus driver was distracted, trying to see what was going on in his rearview mirror. Still invisible, I grabbed the wheel from him and jerked it to the left. Everybody howled as they were thrown to the right, and I heard what I hoped was the sound of three Furies smashing against the windows.
"Hey!"
the driver yelled.
"Hey! Whoa!"
We wrestled for the wheel. The bus slammed against the side of the tunnel, grinding metal, throwing sparks a mile behind us. We careened out of the Lincoln Tunnel and back into the rainstorm, people and monsters being tossed around the bus, cars plowed aside like bowling pins. Somehow, the driver found an exit. We shot off the highway, threw half a dozen traffic lights, and ended up barreling down one of those New Jersey rural roads where you can't believe there's so much nothing right across the river from New York. There were woods to our left, the Hudson River to our right, and the driver seemed to be veering toward the river. Another great idea. I hit the emergency brake. The bus wailed, spun a full circle on the wet asphalt, and crashed into the trees. Emergency lights came on. The door flew open. The bus driver was the first one out, the passengers yelling as they stampeded after him. I stepped into the driver's seat and let them pass. The Furies regained their balance. They lashed their whips at Annabeth while she waved her knife and yelled in ancient Greek, telling them to back off. Grover threw tin cans. I looked at the open doorway. I was free to go, but I couldn't leave my friends. I took off the invisible cap.
"Hey!"
The Furies turned, baring their yellow fangs at me, and the exit suddenly sounded like an excellent idea. Mrs. Dodd stalked up the aisle just as she used to do in class, about to deliver my F-minus math test. Every time she flicked her whip, red flames danced along the barbed leather.
Her two ugly sisters hopped on top of the seats on either side of her and crawled toward me like huge, nasty lizards.
"Perseus Jackson," Mrs. Dodd said in an accent that was definitely from somewhere farther south in Georgia. "You have offended the gods. You shall die."
"I liked you better as a math teacher," I told her. She growled. Annabeth and Grover moved up behind the Furies cautiously, looking for an opening. I took the ballpoint pen out of my pocket and uncapped it. Riptide elongated into a shimmering double-edged sword. The Furies hesitated. Mrs. Dodds had felt Riptide's blade before. She obviously didn't like seeing it again.
"Submit now," she hissed, "and you will not suffer eternal torment."
"Nice try," I told her.
"Percy, look out,"
Annabeth cried. Mrs. Dodds lashed her whip around my sword hand while the Furies on either side lunged at me. My hand felt like it was wrapped in molten lead, but I managed not to drop Riptide. I stuck the Fury on the left with its hilt, sending her toppling backward into a seat. I turned and sliced the Fury on the right. As soon as the blade connected with her neck, she screamed and exploded into dust. Annabeth got Mrs. Dodds in a wrestler's hold and yanked her backward while Grover ripped the whip out of her hands.
"Ow!" he yelled. "Ow! Hot! Hot!"
The Fury I'd hilt slammed came at me again, talons ready, but I swung Riptide and she broke open like a pinata. Mrs. Dodds was trying to get Annabeth off her back.
She kicked, clawed, hissed, and bit.
But Annabeth held on while Grover got Mrs. Dodds's legs tied up in her own whip. Finally, they both shoved her backward into the aisle. Mrs. Dodds tried to get up, but she didn't have room to flap her bat wings, so she kept falling down.
"Zeus will destroy you," she promised. "Hades will have your soul." "Bracchus, Maeus, Bessimini," I yelled.
I wasn't sure where the Latin came from. I think it meant, "eat my pants."
Thunder shook the bus. The hair rose on the back of my neck. "Get out," Annabeth yelled at me. "Now."
I didn't need any encouragement. We rushed outside and found the other passengers wandering around in a daze, arguing with the driver, or running around in circles yelling, "We're gonna die." A Hawaiian-shirted tourist with a camera snapped my photograph before I could recap my sword.
"Our bags," Grover realized. "We left our..." Boom!
The windows of the bus exploded as the passengers ran for cover. Lightning shredded a huge crater in the roof, but an angry wail from inside told me Mrs. Dodds was not yet dead.
"Run," Annabeth said. "She's calling for reinforcements. We have to get out of here."
We plunged into the woods as the rain poured down, the bus in flames behind us, and nothing but darkness ahead. Chapter 11. We visit the Garden Gnome Emporium. In a way, it's nice to know there are Greek gods out there, because you have somebody to blame when things go wrong. For instance, when you're walking away from a bus that's just been attacked by monster hags and blown up by lightning, and it's raining on top of everything else, most people might think that's just really bad luck. When you're a half-blood, you understand that some divine force really is trying to mess up your day. So there we were, Annabeth and Grover and I, walking through the woods on the Jersey Shore, the glow of New York City making the night sky yellow behind us, and the smell of the Hudson reeking in our noses. Grover was shivering and braying, his big goat eyes turned slit-pupiled and full of terror. Three kindly ones, all three at once. I was pretty much in shock myself. The explosion of bus windows still rang in my ears, but Annabeth kept pulling us along, saying, "Come on, the farther away we get, the better." All our money was back there,
I reminded her. Our food and clothes, everything.
Well, maybe if you hadn't decided to jump into the fight.
What did you want me to do? Let you get killed?
You didn't need to protect me, Percy. I would have been fine.
Sliced like sandwich bread, Grover put in.
But fine.
Shut up, goat boy, said Annabeth.
Grover brayed mournfully.
Tin cans. A perfectly good bag of tin cans.
We sloshed across mushy ground through nasty twisted trees that smelt like sour laundry.
After a few minutes, Annabeth fell into line next to me.
Look, her voice faltered. I appreciate your coming back for us, okay? That was really brave.
We're a team, right?
She was silent for a few more steps.
It's just that if you died, aside from the fact that it would really suck for you, it would mean the quest was over. This may be my only chance to see the real world.
The thunderstorm had finally let up. The city glow faded behind us, leaving us in almost total darkness.
I couldn't see anything of Annabeth except the glint of her blonde hair.
You haven't left Camp Half-Blood since you were 7? I asked her.
No, only short field trips. My dad...
The history professor.
Yeah, it didn't work out for me living at home. I mean, Camp Half-Blood is my home.
She was rushing her words out now, as if she were afraid somebody might try to stop her.
At camp, you train and train.
And that's all cool and everything, but the real world is where the monsters are.
That's where you learn whether you're any good or not.
If I didn't know any better, I could have sworn I heard doubt in her voice.
You're pretty good with that knife, I said.
You think so?
Anybody who can piggyback ride a fury is okay by me.
I couldn't really see, but I thought she might have smiled.
You know, she said, maybe I should tell you something funny back on the bus.
Whatever she wanted to say was interrupted by a shrill,
ooh, ooh, ooh,
like the sound of an owl being tortured.
Hey, my reed pipes still work, Grover cried. If I could just remember a fine path song, we could get out of these woods.
He puffed out a few notes, but the tune still sounded suspiciously like Hilary Duff. Instead of finding a path, I immediately slammed into a tree and got a nice-sized knot on my head. Add to the list of superpowers I did not have, infrared vision. After tripping and cursing and generally feeling miserable for another mile or so, I started to see light up ahead, the colors of a neon sign. I could smell food, fried, greasy, excellent food. I realized I hadn't eaten anything unhealthy since I'd arrived at Half-Blood Hill and lived on grapes, bread, cheese, and extra lean-cut nymph-prepared barbecue. This boy needed a double cheeseburger. We kept walking until I saw a deserted two-lane road through the trees. On the other side was a closed-down gas station, a tattered billboard for a 1990s movie, and one open business, which was the source of the neon light and the good smell. It wasn't a fast food restaurant like I'd hoped. It was one of those weird roadside curio shops that sell lawn flamingos and wooden Indians and cement grizzly bears and stuff like that. The main building was a long, low warehouse surrounded by acres of statuary. The neon sign above the gate was impossible for me to read, because if there's anything worse for my dyslexia than regular English, it's red cursive neon English. To me, it looked like At New Mess Gurdon Gomen Meproium.
What the heck does that say? I asked.
I don't know, Annabeth said. She loved reading so much, I'd forgotten she was dyslexic too.
Grover translated. Auntie M's Garden Gnome Emporium.
Flanking the entrance, as advertised, were two cement garden gnomes,
ugly, bearded little runts, smiling and waving as if they were about to get their picture taken. I crossed the street, following the smell of the hamburgers.
"Hey," Grover warned.
"The lights are on inside," Annabeth said.
"Maybe it's open."
"Snack bar," I said wistfully.
"Snack bar,"
she agreed.
"Are you too crazy?" Grover said.
"This place is weird." We ignored him. The front lot was a forest of statues, cement animals, cement children, even a cement satyr playing the pipes, which gave Grover the creeps.
"Blah," he bleated. "Looks like my Uncle Ferdinand."
We stopped at the warehouse door.
"Don't knock," Grover pleaded. "I smell monsters."
"Your nose is clogged up from the Furies," Annabeth told him.
"All I smell is burgers. Aren't you hungry?"
"Meat," he said scornfully. "I'm a vegetarian."
"You eat cheese enchiladas in aluminum cans," I reminded him.
"Those are vegetables.
Come on, let's leave.
These statues are looking at me."
Then the door creaked open, and standing in front of us was a tall Middle Eastern woman. At least, I assumed she was Middle Eastern because she wore a long black gown that covered everything but her hands, and her head was completely veiled. Her eyes glinted behind a curtain of black gauze, but that was about all I could make out. Her coffee-colored hands looked old, but well-manicured and elegant, so I imagined she was a grandmother who had once been a beautiful lady. Her accent sounded vaguely Middle Eastern, too. She said,
"Children, it is too late to be out all alone. Where are your parents?"
They're, Annabeth started to say.
"We're orphans," I said.
"Orphans?" the woman said. The words sounded alien in her mouth.
"But my dears, surely not."
"We got separated from our caravan," I said, "our circus caravan.
The ringmaster told us to meet him at the gas station if we got lost, but he may have forgotten, or maybe he meant a different gas station. Anyway, we're lost. Is that food I smell?"
"Oh, my dears," the woman said. "You must come in, poor children. I am Auntie M. Go straight through to the back of the warehouse, please. There is a dining area."
We thanked her and went inside. Annabeth muttered to me,
"Circus caravan?
Always have a strategy, right? Your head is full of kelp." The warehouse was filled with more statues, people in all different poses, wearing all different outfits, and with different expressions on their faces. I was thinking you'd have to have a pretty huge garden to fit even one of these statues, because they were all life-size. But mostly, I was thinking about food.
"Go ahead, call me an idiot for walking into a strange lady's shop like that just because I was hungry. But I do impulsive stuff sometimes. Plus, you've never smelled Auntie M's burgers. The aroma was like laughing gas in the dentist's chair. It made everything else go away." I barely noticed Grover's nervous whimpers, or the way the statue's eyes seemed to follow me, or the fact that Auntie M had locked the door behind us. All I cared about was finding the dining area, and sure enough, there it was at the back of the warehouse, a fast food counter with a grill, a soda fountain, a pretzel heater, and a nacho cheese dispenser, everything you could want, plus a few steel picnic tables out front.
"Please, sit down," Auntie M said.
"Awesome," I said.
Grover said reluctantly.
"We don't have any money, ma'am."
Before I could jab him in the ribs, Auntie M said,
No, children, no money. This is a special case, yes? It is my treat for such nice orphans."
"Thank you, ma'am," Annabeth said.
Auntie M stiffened as if Annabeth had done something wrong, But then the old woman relaxed just as quickly, so I figured it must have been my imagination.
"Quite all right, Annabeth," she said. "You have such beautiful gray eyes, child."
Only later did I wonder how she knew Annabeth's name, even though we had never introduced ourselves. Our hostess disappeared behind the snack counter and started cooking. Before we knew it, she'd brought us plastic trays heaped with double cheeseburgers, vanilla shakes, and extra, extra large servings of French fries. I was halfway through my burger before I remembered to breathe. Annabeth slurped her shake. Grover picked at the fries and eyed the tray's wax paper liner as if he might go for that, but he still looked too nervous to eat.
"What's that hissing noise?" he asked.
I listened, but didn't hear anything. Annabeth shook her head.
"Hissing?" Auntie Em asked. "Perhaps you hear the deep fryer oil. You have keen ears, Grover."
"I take vitamins for my ears."
"That's admirable," she said. "But please, relax."
Auntie Em ate nothing. She hadn't taken off her headdress, even a cook, and now she sat forward and interlaced her fingers and watched us eat. It was a little unsettling having someone stare at me when I couldn't see her face, but I was feeling satisfied after the burger and a little sleepy, and I figured the least I could do was try to make small talk with our hostess.
"So you sell gnomes?" I said, trying to sound interested.
"Oh, yes," Auntie Em said. "And animals and people, anything for the garden. Custom orders. Statuary is very popular, you know."
"A lot of business on this road?"
"Not so much, no, since the highway was built. Most cars, they do not go this way now. I must cherish every customer I get."
My neck tingled, as if somebody else was looking at me. I turned, but it was just a statue of a young girl holding an Easter basket. The detail was incredible, much better than you see in most garden statues. But something was wrong with her face. It looked as if she were startled or even terrified.
"Ah," Auntie Em said sadly, "you notice some of my creations do not turn out well. They are marred. They do not sell. The face is the hardest to get right. Always the face."
"You make these statues yourself?" I asked.
"Oh, yes. Once upon a time, I had two sisters to help me in the business. But they have passed on, and Auntie Em is alone. I have only my statues. This is why I make them. You see, they are my company."
The sadness in her voice sounded so deep and so real that I couldn't help feeling sorry for her. Annabeth had stopped eating. She sat forward and said,
"Two sisters?"
"It's a terrible story," Auntie Em said. "Not one for children, really. You see, Annabeth, a bad woman was jealous of me long ago, when I was young. I had a boyfriend, you know, and this bad woman was determined to break us apart. She caused a terrible accident. My sisters stayed by me. They shared my bad fortune as long as they could. But eventually, they passed on. They faded away. I alone have survived, but at a price, such a price."
I wasn't sure what she meant, but I felt bad for her. My eyelids kept getting heavier, my full stomach making me sleepy. Poor old lady. Who would want to hurt somebody so nice?
"Percy," Annabeth was shaking me to get my attention, "maybe we should go. I mean, the ringmaster will be waiting."
She sounded tense. I wasn't sure why. Grover was eating the waxed paper off the tray now, but if Auntie Em found that strange, she didn't say anything.
"Such beautiful gray eyes," Auntie Em told Annabeth again. My, yes, it has been a long time since I've seen gray eyes like those.
She reached out as if to stroke Annabeth's cheek, but Annabeth stood up abruptly.
We really should go?
Yes, Grover swallowed his wax paper and stood up. The ringmaster is waiting, right?
I didn't want to leave. I felt full and content. Auntie Em was so nice, I wanted to stay with her a while.
Please, dears, Auntie Em pleaded. I so rarely get to be with children. Before you go, won't you at least sit for a pose?
A pose? Annabeth asked warily.
A photograph. I will use it to model a new statue set. Children are so popular, you see. Everyone loves children.
Annabeth shifted her weight from foot to foot.
I don't think we can, ma'am. Come on, Percy.
Sure we can, I said. I was irritated with Annabeth for being so bossy, so rude to an old lady who just fed us for free. It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm?
Yes, Annabeth, the woman purred. No harm.
I could tell Annabeth didn't like it, but she allowed Auntie Em to lead us back out the front door, into the Garden of Statues. Auntie Em directed us to a park bench next to the stone satyr.
Now, she said, I'll just position you correctly. The young girl in the middle, I think, and the two young gentlemen on either side.
Not much light for a photo, I remarked.
Oh, enough, Auntie Em said. Enough for us to see each other, yes?
Where's your camera? Grover asked. Auntie Em stepped back, as if to admire the shot.
Now, the face is the most difficult. Can you smile for me, please? Everyone, a large smile.
Grover glanced at the cement satyr next to him and mumbled, That sure does look like Uncle Ferdinand.
Grover, Auntie Em chastised, look this way, dear.
She still had no camera in her hands.
Percy, Annabeth said.
Some instinct warned me to listen to Annabeth, but I was fighting the sleepy feeling, the comfortable lull that came from the food and the old lady's voice.
I will just be a moment, Auntie Em said. You know, I can't see you very well in this cursed veil.
Percy, something's wrong, Annabeth insisted.
Wrong?
Auntie Em said, reaching up to undo the wrap around her head.
Not at all, dear. I have such noble company tonight. What could be wrong?
That is Uncle Ferdinand, Grover gasped.
Look away from her, Annabeth shouted. She whipped her Yankees cap onto her head and vanished. Her invisible hands pushed Grover and me both off the bench. I was on the ground, looking at Aunt Em's sandaled feet. I could hear Grover scrambling off in one direction, Annabeth in another, but I was too dazed to move. Then I heard a strange, rasping sound above me. My eyes rose to Auntie Em's hands, which had turned gnarled and warty, with sharp bronze talons for fingernails. I almost looked higher, but somewhere off to my left, Annabeth screamed, No! Don't! More rasping, the sound of tiny snakes right above me, from about where Auntie Em's head would be.
Run!
Grover bleated. I heard him racing across the gravel yelling, Maya! To kickstart his flying sneakers. I couldn't move. I stared at Auntie Em's gnarled claws and tried to fight the groggy trance the old woman had put me in.
Such a pity to destroy a handsome young face, she told me soothingly. Stay with me, Percy. All you have to do is look up.
I fought the urge to obey. Instead, I looked to one side and saw one of those glass spheres people put in gardens, a gazing ball. I could see Auntie Em's dark reflection in the orange glass. Her headdress was gone, revealing her face as a shimmering pale circle. Her hair was moving,
writhing like serpents. Auntie M? Auntie M! How could I have been so stupid? Think, I told myself, how did Medusa die in the myth? But I couldn't think. Something told me that in the myth Medusa had been asleep when she was attacked by my namesake, Perseus. She wasn't anywhere near asleep now. If she wanted, she could take those talons right now and rake open my face.
The gray-eyed one did this to me, Percy, Medusa said,
and she didn't sound anything like a monster. Her voice invited me to look up to sympathize with a poor old grandmother.
Annabeth's mother, the cursed Athena, turned me from a beautiful woman into this.
Don't listen to her, Annabeth's voice shouted somewhere in the statuary.
Run, Percy!
Silence,
Medusa snarled. Then her voice modulated back to a comforting purr.
You see why I must destroy the girl, Percy. She is my enemy's daughter. I shall crush her statue to dust. But you, dear Percy, you need not suffer.
No, I muttered. I tried to make my legs move.
Do you really want to help the gods?
Medusa asked.
Do you understand what awaits you on this foolish quest, Percy? What will happen if you reach the underworld? Do not be a pawn of the Olympians, my dear. You will be better off as a statue. Less pain. Less pain.
Percy! Behind me, I heard a buzzing sound like a 200-pound hummingbird in a nosedive. Grover yelled,
Duck!
I turned, and there he was in the night sky, flying from 12 o'clock with his winged shoes fluttering. Grover, holding a tree branch the size of a baseball bat. His eyes were shut tight. His head twitched from side to side. He was navigating by ears and nose alone.
Duck! He yelled again. I'll get her!
That finally jolted me into action. Knowing Grover, I was sure he'd miss Medusa and nail me. I dove to one side. Thwack! At first, I figured it was the sound of Grover hitting a tree. Then Medusa roared with rage.
You miserable satyr, she snarled. I'll add you to my collection.
That was for Uncle Ferdinand, Grover yelled back. I scrambled away and hid in the statuary while Grover swooped down for another pass.
Crwack! Arr!
Medusa yelled, her snake hair hissing and spitting. Right next to me, Annabeth's voice said, Percy! I jumped so high, my feet nearly cleared a garden gnome. Geez, don't do that! Annabeth took off her Yankees cap and became visible.
You have to cut her head off.
What? Are you crazy? Let's get out of here. Medusa is a menace. She's evil. I'd kill her myself, but... Annabeth swallowed, as if she were about to make a difficult admission.
But you've got the better weapon. Besides, I'd never get close to her. She'd slice me to bits because of my mother. You've got a chance.
What?
I can't.
Look, you want her turning more innocent people into statues? She pointed to a pair of statue lovers. A man and a woman, with their arms around each other, turned to stone by the monster. Annabeth grabbed a green gazing ball from a nearby pedestal.
A polished shield would be better.
She studied the sphere critically.
The convexity will cause some distortion. The reflection size should be off by a factor of...
Would you speak English?
I am.
She tossed me the glass ball.
Just look at her in the glass. Never look at her directly.
Hey, guys, Grover yelled somewhere above us. I think she's unconscious. Maybe not, Grover corrected. He went in for another pass with the tree branch.
Hurry, Annabeth told me. Grover's got a great nose, but he'll eventually crash.
I took up my pen and uncapped it, the bronze blade of Riptide elongated in my hand. I followed the hissing and spitting sounds of Medusa's hair. I kept my eyes locked on the gazing ball so I would only glimpse Medusa's reflection, not the real thing. Then, in the green-tinted glass, I saw her. Grover was coming in for another turn at bat, but this time he flew a little too low. Medusa grabbed the stick and pulled him off course. He tumbled through the air and crashed into the arms of a stone grizzly bear with a painful, "Oh!" Medusa was about to lunge at him when I yelled, "Hey!" I advanced on her, which wasn't easy, holding a sword and a glass ball. If she charged, I'd have a hard time defending myself. But she let me approach. 20 feet, 10 feet. I could see the reflection of her face now. Surely it wasn't really that ugly. The green swirls of the gazing ball must be distorting it, making it look worse.
"You wouldn't harm an old woman, Percy," she crooned. "I know you wouldn't."
I hesitated, fascinated by the face I saw reflected in the glass, the eyes that seemed to burn straight through the green tint, making my arms go weak. From the cement grizzly, Grover moaned, "Percy, don't listen to her." Medusa cackled,
"Too late."
She lunged at me with her talons. I slashed up with my sword, heard a sickening shrill, then a hiss like wind rushing out of a cavern, the sound of a monster disintegrating. Something fell to the ground next to my foot. It took all my willpower not to look. I could feel warm ooze soaking into my sock, little dying snake heads tugging at my shoelaces.
"Oh, yuck," Grover said.
His eyes were still tightly closed, but I guess he could hear the thing gurgling and steaming.
"Mega yuck."
Annabeth came up next to me, her eyes fixed on the sky. She was holding Medusa's black veil. She said,
"Don't move."
Very, very carefully, without looking down, she knelt and draped the monster's head in black cloth, then picked it up. It was still dripping green juice.
"Are you okay?"
she asked me, her voice trembling.
"Yeah,"
I decided, though I felt like throwing up my double cheeseburger.
Why didn't the head evaporate?
"Once you sever it, it becomes a spoil of war," she said. "Same as your minotaur horn. But don't unwrap the head. It can still petrify you." Grover moaned as he climbed down from the grizzly statue. He had a big welt on his forehead. His green rasta cap hung from one of his little goat horns, and his fake feet had been knocked off his hooves. The magic sneakers were flying aimlessly around his head. "The Red Baron," I said. "Good job, man." He managed a bashful grin. That really was not fun, though. Well, the hitting her with a stick part, that was fun, but crashing into a concrete bear, not fun. He snatched his shoes out of the air. I recapped my sword. Together, the three of us stumbled back to the warehouse. We found some old plastic grocery bags behind the snack counter and double-wrapped Medusa's head. We plopped it on the table where we'd eaten dinner and sat around it, too exhausted to speak. Finally, I said, "So, we have Athena to thank for this monster?" Annabeth flashed me an irritated look. "Your dad, actually. Don't you remember? Medusa was Poseidon's girlfriend. They decided to meet in my mother's temple. That's why Athena turned her into a monster. Medusa and her two sisters, who helped get her into the temple, they became the three Gorgons. That's why Medusa wanted to slice me up, but she wanted to preserve you as a nice statue. She's still sweet on your dad. You probably reminded her of him." My face was burning. "Oh, so now it's my fault we met Medusa." Annabeth straightened. In a bad imitation of my voice, she said,
"It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm?"
"Forget it," I said. "You're impossible."
"You're insufferable. You're..."
"Hey," Grover interrupted, "you two are giving me a migraine, and satyrs don't even get migraines. What are we going to do with the head?" I stared at the thing. One little snake was hanging out of a hole in the plastic. The words printed on the side of the bag said, "We appreciate your business." I was angry, not just with Annabeth or her mom, but with all the gods for this whole quest, for getting us blown off the road and in two major fights the very first day out from camp. At this rate, we'd never make it to L.A. alive, much less before the summer solstice. What had Medusa said? "Do not be a pawn of the Olympians, my dear. You would be better off as a statue." I got up. "I'll be back." "Percy," Annabeth called after me, "what are you..." I searched the back of the warehouse until I found Medusa's office. Her account book showed her 6 most recent sales, all shipments to the underworld to decorate Hades and Persephone's garden. According to one freight bill, the underworld's billing address was DOA Recording Studios, West Hollywood, California. I folded up the bill and stuffed it in my pocket. In the cash register, I found $20, a few golden drachmas, and some packing slips for Hermes Overnight Express, each with a little leather bag attached for coins. I rummaged around the rest of the office until I found the right size box. I went back to the picnic table, packed up Medusa's head, and filled out a delivery slip. "The gods, Mount Olympus, 600 floor, Empire State Building, New York, New York. With best wishes, Percy Jackson." "They're not gonna like that," Grover warned. "They'll think you're impertinent." I poured some golden drachmas in the pouch. As soon as I closed it, there was a sound like a cash register. The package floated off the table and disappeared with a pop. "I am impertinent," I said. I looked at Annabeth, daring her to criticize. She didn't. She seemed resigned to the fact that I had a major talent for ticking off the gods. "Come on," she muttered. "We need a new plan." Chapter 12. We get advice from a poodle. We were pretty miserable that night. We camped out in the woods, 100 yards from the main road, in a marshy clearing that local kids had obviously been using for parties. The ground was littered with flattened soda cans and fast food wrappers. We'd taken some food and blankets from Auntie Em's, but we didn't dare light a fire to dry our damn clothes. The Furies and Medusa had provided enough excitement for one day. We didn't want to attract anything else. We decided to sleep in shifts. I volunteered to take first watch. Annabeth curled up on one of the blankets and was snoring as soon as her head hit the ground. Grover fluttered with his flying shoes to the lowest bough of a tree, put his back to the trunk, and stared at the night sky. "Go ahead and sleep," I told him. "I'll wake you if there's trouble." He nodded, but still didn't close his eyes. "It makes me sad, Percy." "What does? The fact that you signed up for this stupid quest?" "No, this makes me sad." He pointed at all the garbage on the ground. "And the sky? You can't even see the stars. They've polluted the sky. This is a terrible time to be a satyr." "Oh, yeah. I guess you'd be an environmentalist." He glared at me. "Only a human wouldn't be. Your species is clogging up the world so fast..." "Never mind. It's useless to lecture a human. At the rate things are going, I'll never find Pan." "Pam? Like the cooking spray?" "Pan," he cried indignantly. "P-A-N? The great god Pan?"
What do you think I want a searcher's license for?
A strange breeze rustled through the clearing, temporarily overpowering the stink of trash and muck. It brought the smell of berries and wildflowers and clean rainwater, things that might have once been in these woods. Suddenly, I was nostalgic for something I'd never known.
Tell me about the search, I said.
Grover looked at me cautiously, as if he were afraid I was just making fun.
The god of wild places disappeared 2,000 years ago, he told me. A sailor off the coast of Ephesus heard a mysterious voice crying out from the shore, "Tell them that the great god Pan has died." When humans heard the news, they believed it. They've been pillaging Pan's kingdom ever since. But for the satyrs, Pan was our lord and master. He protected us and the wild places of the earth. We refuse to believe that he died. In every generation, the bravest satyrs pledged their lives to finding Pan. They searched the earth, exploring all the wildest places, hoping to find where he's hidden and wake him from his sleep.
And you want to be a searcher?
It's my life's dream, he said. My father was a searcher, and my Uncle Ferdinand. The statue you saw back there?
Oh, right. Sorry.
Grover shook his head. Uncle Ferdinand knew the risks. So did my dad. But I'll succeed. I'll be the first searcher to return alive.
Hang on. The first?
Grover took his reed pipes out of his pocket. No searcher has ever come back. Once they set out, they disappear. They're never seen alive again.
Not once in 2,000 years?
No.
And your dad? You have no idea what happened to him?
None.
But you still want to go? I said, amazed. I mean, you really think you'll be the one to find Pan?
I have to believe that, Percy. Every searcher does. It's the only thing that keeps us from despair when we look at what humans have done to the world. I have to believe Pan can still be awakened.
I stared at the orange haze of the sky and tried to understand how Grover could pursue a dream that seemed so hopeless. Then again, was I any better?
How are we going to get to the underworld? I asked him. I mean, what chance do we have against a god?
I don't know, he admitted. But back at Medusa's, when you were searching her office, Annabeth was telling me...
Oh, I forgot. Annabeth will have a plan all figured out.
Don't be so hard on her, Percy. She's had a tough life, but she's a good person. After all, she forgave me.
His voice faltered.
What do you mean? I asked.
Forgave you for what?
Suddenly, Grover seemed very interested in fingering notes on his pipes.
Wait a minute, I said. Your first keeper job was 5 years ago. Annabeth has been at camp 5 years. She wasn't... I mean, your first assignment that went wrong...
I can't talk about it, Grover said, and his quivering lower lip suggested he'd start crying if I pressed him. But, as I was saying, back at Medusa's, Annabeth and I agreed there's something strange going on about this quest. Something isn't what it seems.
Well, duh, I'm getting blamed for stealing a thunderbolt that Hades took.
That's not what I mean, Grover said. The kindly ones were sort of holding back, like Mrs. Dodds at Yancey Academy. Why did she wait so long to try to kill you? Then on the bus... They just weren't as aggressive as they could have been.
They seemed plenty aggressive to me.
Grover shook his head. They were screeching at us.
Where is it? Where?
Asking about me, I said.
Maybe, but Annabeth and I, we both got the feeling they weren't asking about a person. They said, where is it? They seemed to be asking about an object.
That doesn't make sense.
I know, but if we've misunderstood something about this quest, and we only have 9 days to find the master bolt...
He looked at me like he was hoping for answers, but I didn't have any.
I thought about what Medusa had said. I was being used by the gods.
What lay ahead of me was worse than petrifaction.
I haven't been straight with you, I told Grover. I don't care about the Master Bolt. I agreed to go to the underworld so I could bring back my mother.
Grover blew a soft note on his